From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm your host, DJ Hunter Deucing here, coming to you live from deep in the heart of Dallas, Texas. And joining me right now is groovy Colorado Mountain High fella, John Gray. Say hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I guess we got to play some Joe Walsh soon.
Yeah. The boomer spirit animal, Jimmy Buffett, may make an appearance here. Along with female boomer spirit animal, Linda Ronstadt. Every baby boomer I worked with at a record store was like, oh, Linda Ronstadt, I had such a crush on her. Oh.
She was big.
Yeah, she was huge.
Big in the 70s.
Huge.
Very big.
Bigly.
People don't even get it.
And joining me in the wild outback of Australia, hard at work with the men at work, it's Mr. John Gray. What am I saying? Stuart Paul. Stuart, say hello, Stu.
Greetings from WPSY Radio here in Melbourne. Hello. Not John Grace.
Yeah. No, not John Grace. That was a mistake. See, this is why I could never be a DJ. I'm terrible on my feet, you know? But the movie we're talking about today, it's a Now story with Now music. It's FM. Film starring Michael Brandon, Eileen Brennan, Alex Karras, Cleavon Little, Martin Mull, Cassie Yates, with the little appearances by Linda Ronstadt, Jimmy Buffett, and what's his bucket? Tom Petty.
Tom Petty, yeah.
Yeah. And to me, like, the reason I wanted to do this on the show is that I thought it's a movie that's very much celebrating the FM radio format. And I thought it would be interesting to look at. This is actually an entry from the Arrow Shelf. It's directed by John Alonso. And it's one that's been sitting on here, but I always thought it would be good to do on the show because, you know, we like to do movies that have a lot to do with music. And, you know, it reminded me a lot of Empire Records, which is a movie that came later.
You structured very similarly.
Like, eerily similarly. Like, Empire Records, I'm kind of going, did they watch this movie and kind of...
Oh, I did. Did WKRP in Cincinnati watch this movie more like it?
I haven't seen that one.
You haven't seen that show at all?
No.
Oh, shit.
Hunter's young, Stu.
Yeah.
But that show's been around for a long time. I mean, really.
It's a Gen X thing, though. That's a total Gen X thing, is WKRP. No,
John, you would have seen the correlation with WKRP, surely.
Well, you know, I looked into that, and of course they claim that the WKRP pilot was in development while FM was filming.
I read that too. I don't believe it.
They denied it up and down, but then I talked to a friend of mine today who was around in 78 and went to see FM and watched the premiere of WKRP, and he said at the time they all felt like WKRP stole from FM. And FM was not a successful movie at all, so it was almost like, oh, let's steal from this bomb film. But I don't know what's true. But
no way, man.
There's a lot of parallels.
There is. I'll just bring on one real quick before we go into it. The Martin Mull character of Eric Swan, you cannot tell me Howard Hessman's Dr. Johnny Fever wasn't based on that. Come off it.
Precisely. And even the Cleavon Little DJ he's on all night. That's Venus Flytrap.
Venus Flytrap, exactly, yeah. All they've done is they've switched where with Martin Mull's character played a lot of lo-fi, sort of milder music, and Cleavon Little's Prince of Darkness was playing the rock. They flipped that with WKRP where Johnny Fever was playing the rock and Venus Flytrap was playing like the soul. Soul for me. And also the guy, who was that main guy in the movie? Jeff Duggan.
Michael Brandon.
Yeah.
Michael Brandon plays him.
Gary Sandy from WKRP was an absolute double take on it. But minus the beard, it would have been Gary Sandy's twin brother.
Well, they claim it was based on the same, both characters were based on the same DJ in Los Angeles. But I don't know. It's just there's a lot there that even the plot, I swear they did that plot on WKRP probably a dozen times.
Easily. Anyway,
a sponsor that personally offends the station manager, Andy, and, you know, the corporation wants those commercials to play, and well, he thinks they're in bad taste or whatever.
The woman who was running the station, or who was in charge of the station, you know, not fully, but there was basically Gordon Jump's character in WKRP.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we'll get into all that later, but, yeah.
But, yeah, the plot of this movie is, you know, you have a FM radio station, Q-Sky, and it's kind of just about the trials and tribulations they have going on, but the big overarching plot is that the Army wants to do radio spots on there, and the main character, Jeff Duggan, played by Michael Brandon, doesn't want to go along with it. He keeps saying that they want to kind of take the station successful enough, and they want to, you know, sort of Cadillac it and turn it into like this, into a more corporate thing, which today a lot of radio feels like it's just an algorithm now. But you also have the DJs, and they all have different personalities, and they all have different approaches. Like Eric Swan kind of has this Don Juan personality. But and then Cleavon Little, he's kind of the night guy, you know. Hey, it's a night shift, baby.
Yeah.
And in the movie, it has a lot of MCA records artists. It's all very
MCA records. Yeah,
it's all very like kind of what I would consider like quintessential baby boomer rock music,
right.
Album oriented rock music.
Stop
like
there.
Jimmy
stop
Buffett.
Stop you know, right there. Like, stop right there.
Yeah. Okay.
Wait, John. You listening? You ready?
Yeah.
Hunter, I bet you own this soundtrack on vinyl, right?
No, I don't.
Oh, no way.
If I find
oh
it, I will.
Let me
if
get
I
out of my
find
fucking...
find it, I will.
Oh, man, let me just pick myself up off the floor, please.
I know. Wow.
Should be easy to find because apparently it went platinum while the movie flopped.
Yeah, I mean, the soundtrack is kind of a brainer.
The soundtrack is out fucking standing for this movie. It really is. It's one of the best out there I've ever heard.
I mean, and it's got like Joe Walsh, it's got the Eagles, it's got like Linda Ronstadt, Steely Dan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Boss Gags, Boston.
Boss Gags, yeah, Boston. Oh, man.
Yeah, they had Lido. I was a little surprised by Lido Shuffle being played in the third act.
Yeah, I will say that Steely Dan opening song was fucking awesome. I'm not much of a Steely Dan fan, but that song was really, really good.
Yeah, the more I hear a Steely Dan, the more I like them. I used to think that they were sort of a...
Sleepy Dan?
Sleepy Dan. You know, like, to me, they were... There are certain bands that I just associate with baby boomer generation stuff, and I'm just like, ah, that's stuff they like. But when I actually listen to it, I go, okay, maybe the boomers are right. You know, like, the Eagles are good. You know, like, Joe Walsh is awesome. You know, you just kind of surrender and let the boomer sort of take over. You
Dad,
know?
Dad had Steely Dan's Gaucho on cassette. I remember him on that one.
Yeah, the one that I always really liked is Asia. You know, that's kind of the main big one that everybody's like, oh yeah, you got to have Asia on vinyl. You know,
I don't consider Asia to be a boomer thing. It's more of a Gen X.
Really interesting.
Yeah, they were big because of MTV, like from 82 and on.
Are you kidding? Really?
Yeah, Asia was played on MTV nonstop for a couple of years, and then about 84 or so, they weren't going to play them at all.
You know who their drummer was way back before they were big?
Bill Ward.
No.
No.
Well, I don't know, maybe.
No.
Chevy Chase.
Really?
Yeah, Chevy Chase was... in that band. I don't think they were called Steely Dan at the time, but it was their project. And
yeah, he was a drummer.
Yeah.
I'm called Steely Griswold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Steely Fletch.
Steely
Fletch. Oh, I totally want to name a band that. Steely Fletch.
Steely Fletch. Yeah, Chevy Chase was in Steely Dan in some form or another way back.
Jesus. The things you find out, eh?
Yeah. During Linda Ronstadt's performance in the movie, did any of you notice... the guy who plays on like all the stuff, he plays with Linda Ronstadt. He played with Warren Zevon. They even covered one
Waddy
of the
Wachtel.
Songs. Waddy Wachtel.
Yeah. Plays on every Joe Walsh album, too.
Yeah. He's a guy, he's played on so much stuff. Did he play with Fleetwood Mac? I don't know. But
he might have done session stuff. He was like a session hired gun.
Yeah.
But he was on Stevie Nicks. He's like, Stevie Nicks live concert from 82, I think he's playing guitar for her. Like, he's everywhere.
I always associate him with like LA kind of 70s rock.
You know, yeah, he was a top LA 70s session guy.
Yeah, like the Zevon stuff with Jackson Browne, you know, and
yep.
You have all the Eagles on the, like those Warren Zevon records, like everybody's on those, like Excitable Boy and his self-titled album. You know, there's just so many performers on those records.
Don't you have a platinum record?
It was a pretty incestuous group, the whole Azoff stable.
Don't you have
I have a platinum record of Excitable Boy.
Yeah, I remember you showing me that.
Yeah,
I'm jeez. Looking
at it right now.
Yeah. Mr. Zevon Street Cred Show.
yeah, man. I love Warren Zevon, man. You know,
Werewolves of London. I'm just gonna do the whole Werewolves of London.
Sorry, my headphones were cutting out. No, I love Warren Zevon, man. He's always been one of my favorite singer-songwriter types from that era.
Yeah. REO Speedwagon as well were in this film.
Yes, they were.
The commercial before that. It's like it was the hard rock version of them.
And they appear in a Tower Records.
Yeah, because I was looking at it and I thought, I was thinking that was Foreigner, but it wasn't. It was REO Speedwagon.
We do have Foreigner on the soundtrack, though.
Oh, we've got Foreigner, Foghat, the Eagles are there. It's like, it's stacked.
It's so good.
It is one of the most stacked soundtracks I've heard in a film.
But what we have in the plot is like, you know, the kind of battle between art and commerce sort of reaches a fever pitch with a big riot. Not a riot, but like a protest at the end. It's very similar to Empire Records. And then the owner comes down and he's like, "You boys are pretty cool. This is going to stay the way it is." Guy's played by Norman Lloyd, who is one of Orson Welles's Mercury Theater people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was in Macbeth on stage back in the Depression. He's in The Battle Over Citizen Kane, and he talks about Orson Welles like spitting on his actors and abusing them and
Jesus.
Stuff.
He was sort of the Steve Jobs of his day.
Yeah, he was like, he said that
Steve Jobs of acting.
Their first, like, it was like, no, it wasn't, I'm sorry, it wasn't Macbeth. What am I saying? It was Julius Caesar.
How could you get that wrong?
I know. They did like
not
fascist.
Mr. Shakespeare shelf tonight.
Yeah, that's right.
I know. He wasn't, but he was in that Julius Caesar. And I remember in Battle Over Citizen Kane, he talks about the first performance didn't go well. And like this, somebody said something like, are we going out to take a bow or something? And Orson Welles spit in his eye.
You know? Oh my goodness.
But it was driving me nuts when I saw him. I was like, who is that guy? And then I went, that's the dude who was one of Orson Welles's actors back.
And he's introduced listening to Abbott and Costello on the radio, which I thought was funny. Like he doesn't listen to his own station.
That's funny. I didn't notice that. But he was in like Dead Poets Society, and he was in some Hitchcock movies. He was in the show Saint Elsewhere, so he's done a lot of stuff. But
everybody was in that bloody show at one point or another.
I thought Cleavon Little was going to have a bigger role than he had in this movie, because you see him a lot at the beginning, but
yeah,
you don't see him that much.
I'll tell you what was the biggest sort of surprise was Alex Karras was there, then he was gone. He was kind of really pointless. I mean, he wasn't bad in it, but his character was like, you're not writing too well, so you got to go. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
he's like the country western guy there.
Yeah.
I wondered if he was like, if there was more film that made the cutting room floor or something.
Yeah,
possibly.
Like something was supposed to happen after that, because that was just odd. You know?
I thought he was going to come back at the end and shoot somebody.
Yeah.
No, seriously. No, I thought he was going to pay off towards the end. But
it felt like they were setting up something that never paid off, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, one of the scenes in the movie is they go to a Jimmy Buffett concert. What are your guys' thoughts on Jimmy Buffett? Because he's one of those artists I have never really looked into. He's another one that I've always thought was just a boomer thing. He put out a new record like a couple weeks ago.
He is just a boomer thing, huh?
Okay. I'll do you one better. I'd never heard of him until this film. Never.
Really?
Never.
Are you kidding
me? No, I'm not. I heard of Warren, his brother, but not Jimmy.
Yeah, Warren's not Dairy Queen. So that's all I know.
I'd never heard of this guy.
What? I'm thunderstruck by that. No, he has like his own line of restaurants here. He's like,
but I don't live there. You're forgetting. I do not live there.
I don't see the Jimmy Buffett Act carrying overseas or.
No, I can understand.
In a foreign market at all?
No,
it's just to me like he feels somewhat ubiquitous, and I think he was extremely popular here in Texas, specifically in Highland Park and University Park in Dallas.
Right.
Oh, rednecks love him.
Oh yeah,
he's huge with the, but he's like the one American act that could probably go to Japan and not be mobbed.
That's actually an interesting.
I just don't see that act carrying overseas at all.
It
not
is
to
very
Australia,
it,
not to England. No,
it Jimmy Buffett, Stu, to me always felt like the quintessential ugly American tourist.
Yeah.
Like Hawaiian t-shirt. Or a Hawaiian shirt, sandals, you know, because all
just,
of the songs
you just described
like,
Jedi Cole right there.
he kind of, I don't know, he might look like Jedi Cole now, but no, not Jedi Cole now, but Jedi Cole like he 10 years ago might have looked like Jedi Cole, 20 years ago, 30 yeah. years ago. I don't know how old Jedi Cole is. I work with Jedi Cole's brother.
You've said about a trillion times.
Yeah, I know. But, I've gotten to know him better than Jedi Cole, but Jimmy. But all of his songs are like about hanging out at the beach and taking it easy, and you know, just sort of enjoying the waves and burgers and margaritas.
Like the Beach Boys, basically like the Beach Boys.
Yeah,
he's more of a Southeast version of the Beach Boys.
Yeah, that's
I mean, I went to the college where I think he graduated from, USM, for two semesters. And that's about an hour away from the Gulf Coast, and it's like that's what his stuff gives me that vibe is Gulf Coast beachcombing, basically.
Yeah,
you know, hanging out at a bar, drinking a beer, playing an 8-track. It's 1979. You know, you're just walking on the beach.
There's a demo. There's a demo Warren Zevon never released during his lifetime, but it came out later called the Rosarita Beach Cafe. And it's like, it's just a song about like, you know, drinking on the beach and playing poker. And
have you got the platinum record for that one as well?
I do not. No. Oh,
that's your next name,
was
I guess.
Was he making fun of Jimmy Buffett by chance? Because it seems like there's.
Could be. I don't know.
Because David Allan Coe did a Jimmy Buffett spoof called Divers Do It Deeper. People go look that up on YouTube. It's pretty funny. But he's totally done in the Jimmy Buffett style with calypso guitars and sounds and stuff. It's pretty funny because he's just making fun of Jimmy Buffett. He's singing like him and everything.
I'm curious to listen to Jimmy's new record just to see what it's like. And it has him on the cover and there's waves and
I'll tell you right now, it's a boomer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
gonna,
I just
give me Mr. Buffett shelf by the time this is over.
I'm curious.
Where's your sandals, parrot head?
Stu, what'd you think of his performance in this? Since you'd never heard of him,
I can't remember it. I don't care much for him.
So you didn't think much of it?
Nah.
Drinking a Miller Lite there, Hunter?
I'd never heard the songs he played in this, and it just kind of seemed like sort of standard rock and roll. You know,
I don't really care much for Linda Ronstadt, to be honest with you. I mean, she's good, but she doesn't really do much for me.
I don't really care much for her either, but she played Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me, so I'm happy.
I'll tell you what, I came away from this thinking that, geez, I wish Tom Petty had played on stage instead of Linda Ronstadt or Jimmy
Buffett. Yeah, like they had Tom Petty in the movie, and if we had gotten a Tom Petty performance, that would have been better.
Or an REO Speedwagon one. It would have been good.
Linda was way bigger than either of them by...
Oh, I'd imagine.
Platinum record after platinum record. She's huge.
Yeah, I can imagine.
That's part of the plot is like them trying to steal the broadcasting the show from the other radio station.
Yeah.
Kind of a sitcom-y sort of plot there.
It was very, very TV movie level writing there.
Yeah, for sure.
That's why I said before the parallels drawn between this and WKRP. I mean, Hardy, you haven't seen it, but for John and I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's, there's so much.
If you were to do a double feature of this film and then say the pilot of WKRP, you wouldn't know any different because they are so close to each other, just in format right. and structure and characters even. It's just, you know, John, the only thing missing from this film was a turkey drop. That was it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all that was missing.
It's true. It needed that or a Les Nessman type character. It didn't have that.
Yeah, no, it didn't have
that's
that.
That's all that's really missing.
Yeah, yeah. But it had quite a bit else. But honey, you were saying
it's funny. It's that this movie inspired, I think, Empire Records and WKRP, yet was a flop.
Yeah, it's funny how these movies kind of find that cult audience that carries it over. I guess
you were saying too.
But then again, yeah. Well, yeah. I was just gonna actually I forgot what I was gonna say. But now that you mention it,
you were saying something to me. I remember you said my name, but
I don't know. But this came out the same year as Rock and Roll High School, right? Or
no, it was a year later, I think. Okay. That was
79. Oh, okay, so let's say 12-month difference. That flopped as well, didn't it, from memory?
The way Corman released movies, I don't know if he had a real flop with that.
Yeah, the thing about Corman is it's like these are low-budget movies that are not, you know, they're meant to just make a margin, a mile price. I mean, if it didn't make its budget back, then yeah, but
he released it. He released his stuff regionally. It would play in one state 1 week, another state another week. You know, it just kind of played a circuit. And I don't think he ever really lost money on stuff like Rock and Roll High School. But FM was a big budget Universal comedy.
A lot of that would have gone to the music for sure.
The music clearance. Well, I mean, they owned the record company. It was MCA Records, which is Universal, and. But yeah, probably paying that, and also that whole entire finale on the where they're tipping over the trucks and stuff. Mm-hmm. That was all shot at the Universal downtown studio set.
Oh, it looks like a set. That does not look like an actual town.
Yeah, it totally was. It's like it's the same one you see in Back to the Future, and you see it in so many other movies and TV shows. But yeah, that was all. They had all those extras on the set and everything, and tipping over vehicles and everything, but it was obviously pumped a lot of money into it.
One thing I would like to know is, I didn't research this because I just ran out of time, was I wonder if the Arrow Blu-ray keeps all the music from the original theatrical release, or there's been altered stuff because of copyright.
I believe it does.
I believe it did.
I think everything was cleared. I was surprised.
Wow, that's surprising.
I watched it, and it had all this music in it, and there's even a video where this guy talks about all the songs on the soundtrack, and all the songs he talked about were in the movie that I saw on Blu-ray.
Wow.
And
that's awesome.
But it was funny. He talks about, tell me what you guys think of this. Cause the guy, you know, he's an older guy, and he talks about that this movie takes place in a world where punk never happened. But I'm like, was that stuff wasn't really on the radio, was it?
No, it wasn't.
No,
I mean,
no,
I'm kind of. He's like, it's all album. Or he's like, it takes place in a world where punk never happened. And I was sitting there going, but you know, like playing the Ramones on the radio, that only happens in movies, you know?
Yeah.
It didn't happen in 78 in America. It just didn't.
And it seems like that's something that writers and critics obsess over, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, those were the best records at the time, but they weren't played on the radio at all. That's why they didn't sell.
Yeah.
And it's like if radio DJs, like if the Talking Heads or the Sex Pistols were playing your small town, like the radio DJs would crusade against them. Ah, these punk bands are coming into town.
It's like people seem to think that New York Dolls would have been all over the radio. No way.
Nah, not at all.
No one played New York Dolls.
Their biggest exposure was Don Kirshner's rock concert. Don Kirshner's rock concert was their biggest exposure.
Yeah.
And that didn't even kick their sales in overdrive. I mean, I heard Pills on my classic rock station.
Yeah.
It's the best I heard.
I'm a Buster Poindexter fan myself.
Yeah, of course you are. Contrarian, you. Actually, I'm a Car 54 RU fan myself. One of the most god-awful movies.
But that always goes back to something I can't stand is when I'll watch a movie that's filmed recently but set in the 70s and they'll have the Ramones on the radio.
You know
with the exception of Blondie, you just didn't hear those bands on the radio. Blondie was the only one.
Yeah.
And there was certainly no thing as classic rock back then. Like, there was no classic rock channel. I mean, there is now. Obviously, well, they're everywhere. But
that was the contemporary rock, was the California singer-songwriter stuff.
Well, so actually, this reminds me. I was listening to a podcast this week that I hadn't listened to in a while. It was a podcast. You know, we're all never trunkers here at the Midnight Movie Cowboys. No. I saw that Buck Dharma was on Eddie Trunk, and so I went, okay, I'm going to listen this week. And but it was a double interview, and Don Dokken was on first.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah. And Don Dokken was, you know, he was talking about various things, but he said something that I thought was interesting. He goes, you mentioned Blondie and you mentioned the Talking Heads. He goes, all that stuff you see in documentaries about the Sunset Strip and the whiskey and blah, blah, blah. He goes, it's true and it's not. He said, because there was a period, he said, there was a minute there where New Wave just took over and nobody would talk to you if you were in hard rock. It was all like Oingo Boingo and Talking Head and like, you know, just New Wave. And so he was like, so we went to Germany for a while because that's where all the rock stuff was happening. But I had never heard that before. I was kind of intrigued by that.
Well, I watched that a 1986 movie called Out of Bounds, I'm presuming was filmed in 85, and it's got Anthony Michael Hall on the run and the Sunset Strip area and everything, and the bands playing on the soundtrack are all new wave pseudo-punk stuff, and in a nightclub scene, Susie and the Banshees is playing. And the only reason they were there is because they happened to be in town that week playing at that club that they were going to film at. And they read the script and said, okay, yeah, we'll do this movie.
Interesting.
So it's very true that there was a period where it was all new wave and kind of punk goth stuff.
Yeah, because he was like, he said that if you were in one of these rock bands, he said nobody would talk to you.
Yeah.
Well, nobody wants to speak to Don Dokken because, well, he's Don Dokken.
I mean, I like George Lynch, though.
Yeah, but that's George Lynch. He's not Don Dokken.
I know. I'm just saying Dokken, you know, George.
Yeah.
Anyway. But, you know, I tuned in to hear Buck Dharma, so I think I just wanted to say that, you know, so nobody thinks less of me for listening to Eddie Trunk last week.
Did Eddie tell Buck Dharma that, you know, Blue Oyster Cult wasn't popular to listen to in high school, but he listened to him.
Yeah, he got beat up. He got beat up for listening to Boys the Cult.
Stickers on his station wagon.
People keyed his car because he listened to BOC.
Yeah. Did he praise Club Ninja as their overlooked record?
You know what? I really like that record. White Flags.
There's some very good songs on there. Shadow Warrior.
Make rock, not war.
Howard Stern's on there. He's the greatest.
Club Ninja woke up with a monster. When are people just going to realize these are great albums?
He actually did say, he goes, you know what's a song that I love is Take Me Away.
Wish someone would fucking take him away.
I've been listening to some of the new BOC and it's pretty good.
Okay, Spotify, here I come.
It's there's a song, the song with the first song on the album's called That Was Me, and it's really funny. It's just Eric Bloom. They've got Alan Bouchard back playing the cowbell.
Oh my.
The song's called That Was Me, and it's just him going, when you see a crack in the sidewalk, that was me. When you see a weeping out the window, think of me.
it's just
him
stupid.
Saying, like, when you see bullet holes in highway signs, that was me.
Wow. All right.
Did you get it on vinyl, Hunter?
Pre-ordered.
Oh, God.
You can't play it anymore.
But it's very BOC because I've heard like three songs and they all sound completely different, you know.
When like, you see what, a man going to the record store wasting his money on the Blue Oyster Cult, that was me.
But it's just him like saying like things you see and then going, it was me. Like a me.
Jesus.
They put out a music video for it though, and they all look so old. It's like why be in the video? You know, I posted it in the
They're all fat and old. Yeah, I've seen the publicity. Sad.
Gone from Eric Bloom to Eric Wilting.
Yeah, Eric Wilt.
Yeah, Eric Wilt.
Yeah, but I like the songs though. They're pretty good.
Whatever you say.
Yeah, sure.
All right.
But FM, you know, this is I really enjoy these kind of lightweight record promo movies.
Was this your first time seeing
it? They're their own genre.
Yeah. What were you saying, Stu?
Was that your first time seeing it today?
Yeah, I'd never seen it before. It's been sitting on my shelf, and I went, this will be good to do on the show. And I recently said it because I was sitting there staring at it on the shelf going, I want to watch this. And I just thought, you know, but I was holding out to do it.
I'd seen here. That poster so many times, like on VHS tapes or just around, especially the soundtrack I'd see a lot. And I just thought, what is this, FM? Okay, whatever. I never bothered with it. I mean, you said about doing it, I thought, rings a bell. I know it's late 70s something. I thought it was a De Palma movie for some reason, but then I got mixed up with Home Movies, which was around the same time. Not about, it's not about music, but it was around the same time. So that's why I thought that was that.
Speaking of the Arrow Shelf, I need to watch the rest of the De Niro and De Palma box set I have with Hi Mom.
Good luck getting through the wedding party, whatever it's called, or the swap.
Oh, yeah, that one's in there. Fucking awful. I'm not excited about that one, but Greetings was great, I thought.
Yeah, Greetings. I really like Greetings. I like Hi Mom too, as well. But the wedding party, oh man, you're going to suffer through that one. It's so bad.
Yeah, it looks rough.
All the Restoration Arrow does cannot save that movie. It's awful.
I remember Troma put out a DVD of it a long time ago.
There you go.
The Troma Art House Collection.
Yeah, the Troma. Hey, this is Lloyd Kaufman.
The terrible promos and blurbs on it, you know, like a comic book.
This is Lloyd Kaufman. I like lots of movies.
We're going bankrupt. Please support us.
We're going bankrupt.
5 years.
I know you guys like movies with lots of blood and boobs in them, but here's an artsy De Palma student film.
But hey, at least we got a Melvin Junko commentary on it.
Please support us. We're going bankrupt. Please, every year.
I'm surprised there hasn't been a Toxic Avenger 5 yet.
Kabuki Man.
Oh, my God.
Please come work on my sequel to Sergeant Kabuki Man for free.
We can't afford to pay you because we're almost going out of business.
We're going out of business.
Join the Troma Club.
Join the Troma team. We're you know, here's this fat guy who's dead who's going to pretend to be Michael Hertz.
I actually own Sergeant Kabuki Man on Blu-ray. I do enjoy that movie.
It's got the like car flipping and exploding shot that they've reused in every movie.
Yeah.
Like they were like, oh, we got this one shot. We're getting a lot of mileage out of this.
I hate their films so much. I hate trauma movies.
They're not very good. I mean, I've got that and I've got I've got all the four Toxie movies because they are stupid.
The best trauma films are the making of documentaries on their DVDs because they all make Lloyd Kaufman look like a horrible person.
They expose him as the horrible
person.
I'm
sure he
is. Yeah.
He's like a Roger Corman. He probably just doesn't pay anybody.
Yeah.
And then he always claims he's broke.
Yeah.
Probably walks around with holes in his shoe going, oh, I need new shoes. I can't afford it because they're going to put out Sergeant Kabuki Man.
Hey, our movie. It's an independent movie. Not like that prick Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
You know who makes mainstream movies? Why would you want to see those? You want to watch real art like Troma. Hey, you know whose career I started? James Gunn.
Oh, yeah, boy, he should be cast off to Siberia just for that.
He likes crime against humanity. Yeah, he likes to be like, I'm like Roger Corman because I started these careers over here. He started Scorsese and Coppola and Bogdanovich. Well, I started James Gunn.
Yeah. Yep. There's a parallel. Not.
There's a parallel right there.
Yes. But this is my first time watching it.
I've never seen it either.
What about you, John? I caught it on cable once back in Mississippi back in 1986.
I watched it right after wrestling, you know,
And a Shaw Brothers movie as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw it between episodes of Black Belt Theater.
Yeah, I also saw Foxy Brown and Coffee, and I watched FM as well.
If I try to do an impression of John, I end up sounding like Adam Carolla, which, you know, so it's hard to do. Because Carolla. Well.
Yeah.
There he is.
No, this is my first time watching it, but I remember watching bits and pieces of it on ABC back in like 1980 when they did their network television premiere. Ernie Goulardi Anderson was announcing FM, you know.
Lord.
They act like it was a big deal, and I was probably like reading a comic book or something while it was on, and I remember seeing the Linda Ronstadt stuff. I don't remember anything else about it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't give a shit. You know, I was a little kid. When I was 8, I didn't care about Linda Ronstadt or any of that music.
I'm 48 and I don't care about Linda Ronstadt. I'll tell you one woman I do give a fuck about is the, can we get a hell yes for that woman who went and visited Eric Swan in the radio booth?
Brenda Venus, I think was her name.
Yeah, Brenda Venus. Oh, mate.
She was a Henry Miller muse in his final years. Yep. She was also a writer, and I guess she was also cheap TNA you could hire for, big studio films.
Mm, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Eric Swan is like, he's like the Don Juan, you know.
Well, it's like we're supposed to feel sorry for him or something.
Yeah, I know.
Total louse, total 70s mustache jerk.
He wants to be a game show host.
Yeah.
I want to give up this because I want to go be a game show host. I'm sure.
I like Martin Mull, but you know, come on, you're not gonna have me sympathize with that jerk.
I was getting him mixed up because I'm sitting here watching it going, this can't be the guy from Night Court. That guy was like 7 foot tall with a bald head. I'm thinking, oh, it's a different guy altogether. That's Richard Mull.
Yeah, they got Richard Mull.
Yeah, yeah, I'm getting the names mixed up. And
I'm thinking, Martin Mull didn't play monsters in Charles Band movies.
No, what was he in, this guy Martin Mull? And what do I know his name
Martin
from?
Mull was in Serial, which is a really good movie,
right?
And that came out in 1980, and I think it was called something else in foreign countries. And he was also in he did a TV show called Clue Tonight.
He was in Clue. He was Colonel Mustard.
That's right.
Oh boy! Oh, talk about good casting there. Shit.
Yeah, he was sort of seen as one of those future comedy geniuses. Like, he was supposed to be a big deal, but he never caught on the way like the SNL people did or whatever. He was like, had more of a cult audience.
Right.
He was also, it says here he had a recurring role on 2.5 Men.
Yeah, he said, and he was even on Roseanne, like as a gay guy or something. But I guess his thing was like the late 60s. He did like a comedy folk music act or something. And I guess he was on stuff like the Smothers Brothers or something like that.
Oh, okay.
But Serial is a pretty good movie. That might be worth a future show.
Okay.
That's one of those movies where it portrays all the new age stuff and organic food and whatever as absolutely sick and weird. And of course, now a lot of that stuff is normal.
Yeah.
It's like mainstream, but back then it's portrayed as these bizarre, crazy Northern California people.
Oh, like the raw food movement.
Yeah. It was like he's in buying health food at a grocery store, and you know, the checkout clerk is, you know, saying, oh, this kills the whales and all that stuff. And it's all portrayed as being ridiculous. And then now that's Whole Foods. You know, that's any of these places you go to.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it's funny how you see these sort of buzzwords cycle out in food. When I was a kid, it was low fat,
yeah,
fat free. Mm-hmm. Now it's organic, all natural, organic. Right. And it's you'll go to these organic food stores, and I'll go, okay, cool, it's organic, and I'll pick it up and I'll flip it over. Oh, it's got cane sugar in it. Okay, well, I'm trying to avoid sugar, yeah, so that doesn't do me any good. If it has high fructose corn syrup or cane sugar, it's still not something I'm gonna want to eat. You know,
I think you'll find cane sugar is a bit better for you than high fructose corn syrup.
Of course it is. But I'm still trying to avoid sugar.
Oh, I get it. Yeah,
But that's like, a lesser of two evils, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, oh, but it's real sugar. I'm like, yeah, you know, okay, if I'm going to drink a Coke, I'd rather drink a Mexican Coke, you know, because it's got real sugar in it. But I'm still,
Australian Coke. It's the same thing.
There you go.
Yeah. We don't have the Aussie Coke.
Because you pull that synthetic shit in your Coke, that's why.
I know, it's awful. It tastes terrible.
I had it once in America. I'm like, fuck, this is horrid.
Yeah, whenever I have full-flavored Coke, which is by accident sometimes, my mouth feels like it's coated in, you know, chemicals.
I can't.
It burns my mouth.
I can't have cola. I can't have any type of cola. It doesn't matter if it's no sugar or full flavor. I can't do it. I just hate the taste of it.
I stopped drinking soda altogether. Well, I mean, I drink like seltzer water because I like the way it feels, but I stopped drinking like Diet Coke, any kind of, you know, flavored soda. You know?
Yeah. Not going to hurt you. That's for sure.
I was like, yeah, it's just something I don't need. You know, I drink too much caffeine as it is.
Give away.
If you can cut it, do so.
Give away the booze. Get rid of the booze as well. You don't need it.
Right.
Don't need it. It's just a crux.
I'm dependent on it. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
It'll age you.
It'll
totally age you out.
No, I've cut.
You'll look like Martin Mull with another year, 5 years.
You sound like Al Jorgensen. I'm not a drug abuser. I'm a drug user.
Listen, I just need it. Otherwise, I'll die. No, but I've cut back on all that stuff. Working out lately and, you know, getting back on a good diet with this quarantine, it's been awesome getting back in the swing of things. So
yep.
It's good. But FM, a now story with now music. Any other thoughts we have on it?
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed this a lot. I expected nothing from it. It was like I just put it on. I thought, oh, give it a watch and, started watching.
It's very light entertainment, but it's fun. And what I enjoyed about it was that it, I like these things as kind of time capsules.
Yes.
Because as it's advertised, it's supposed to be like, this is what's currently cool and hip and blah, blah, blah. Sort of like Empire Records, like the CD shop was the cool thing when that came out. And to me, it's sort of a look back at how we consumed music. We have the DJ, the long form, you know, DJ with each one has their own personality and the music, and you have the record stores, and it's a window into a different time.
It's a dying art, the radio DJ, because these days everything's just on a playlist.
Nowadays it's like podcasting's where you go to hear someone's personality.
Yeah,
you know,
there's no more real DJs. Everything is just, you know, a bunch of songs lined up, then you'll shoehorn a few commercials in, and it's, you know, a few words from the DJ, and then it's back to playing the playlist, and there's no real...
Well, and you know what's funny is, in that, I'm going to bring it back to that interview I heard, Eddie Trunk was talking to Buck Dharma, and Eddie's like, why do you think it is that radio stations are so afraid of new music, and blah, blah, blah. And Buck goes, oh, because they're playing old stuff, and they're selling people memories, and that's it.
Yep.
You know?
He's right.
Yeah. He was like, it's not a big mystery.
It was like the old thing about I think it was Dee Snider who said that.
I kind of wonder if she could blame
John, you're breaking up.
John needs to fix his radio dial a bit. We're getting a bit of static, John.
Yeah, John's gonna adjust his dial.
Yeah.
Don't
touch that
when
dial.
When you're back in here, John. Oh.
Okay. You can hear me?
Piss off, John,
like
for a minute.
It's like the Stu calls from 8 months ago.
Oh, there you are. You're back. Okay. Tell me what you were going to say.
I was going to say, like, the Howard Stern Morning Zoo type thing is probably what killed music radio.
Interesting. It's an interesting take.
Because like you had 3 hours of talking.
Yeah, and you that's
instead of
you,
selling the music. You know?
Yeah, you'd go for there for the personality, and you know you want to hear some music. You go to the classic rock station, and they play the stuff that's kind of comfy. You know, you can hear it Back in Black 500 times or whatever.
I'll tell you one thing. I think I brought it up before. I've always preferred listening. I'm not trying to sound like a hipster or anything. I've always liked the sound of songs of that era through AM than FM. There's just something about it. It's like it gives like a warm
sound.
As you'll
find that AM radio is a modern and viable form of communication.
No, that was something that again, Buck Dharma said was he was talking about. Trunk was asking him about "Don't Fear the Reaper," and he said, "Yeah, you know, we made the song, and you know, we thought it was good, but it was a huge hit." And he goes, "It even made it to AM radio."
Yeah, I can see that with that song for sure.
What is that? Okay, me being a millennial moron. What does that mean? Like, it even made it to AM radio. Was that like? Was that like for just the biggest stuff or what?
No, I think the older stuff from what I can understand is like the older, like the generation before, or like, you know, 10 years before was AM. Like you'll never hear over here. You'll never hear Metallica on AM radio. Like we're Enter Sandman, always FM. You'll never hear Pearl Jam on AM, always FM. You'll never hear Soundgarden or, you know, Alice in Chains. That's more reserved for your Janis Ian's and your Joan Armatrading and, you know, Paul McCartney and Wings, you know, the softer stuff like Mall of Kintyre. That's your AM radio right there. So when you said about Don't Fear the Reaper, I can totally understand that song making it to AM radio at that time because it had that feel to it. Whereas a song like Godzilla from Blue Oyster Cult, we'll stick with them, would not make AM radio.
Yeah, in the United States, AM was where the top 40, what they called AM gold, was.
Okay. See, I just thought that was interesting that he noted that.
And after
that,
it was more prog rock, because it became AM gold.
Yeah, I'm just trying to cast my mind back to the AM station that I listened to. Because I predominantly listen to AM. I'm not a big fan of FM at all. And yeah, they play, just that mid, you know, like Stills and Croft, Summer Breeze, all those sorts of stuff. Those sort of very safe songs they'll play on AM.
Summer Breeze.
You wouldn't even hear Kiss.
Isley Brothers do a great cover of that, though.
So does Typo Negative, right, Hannah?
Even in the 70s, yeah. Kiss on AM. Yeah.
Typo Negative, they had different lyrics for their cover of Summer Breeze, and I think the Seals and Crofts or the record company or the band said, no, you have to cover the song as is. Or
a bit Megadeth with Lee Hazelwood with These Boots. Yeah. It was like, nope, you ain't doing that. You ain't changing these lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they ended up just doing a Typo Negative style cover of it, you know.
Yeah, which is perfectly fine. You know, put your own stamp on it musically, but yeah, don't go altering the lyrics. No room for heroes. You don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Leave them as they are. Otherwise, yeah, I'm with Seals and Croft. Piss off. You're going to change the words? Put your own musical stamp on it, sure, but don't change the words.
Yeah.
Pete Steele, idiot.
Yeah, Pete Steele was, you know, he was doing a jokey version of it because that Typo Negative is a very jokey band.
No. I do not like Typo Negative and I do not like Carnival. They are both shit bands.
I love both.
I know you do. That's where we differ, greatly differ. I can't stand both.
I'm looking at my copy of Slow, Deep, and Hard over there that I'm going to sell because it's worth like quite a bit. So.
Oh, really? Discogs?
Vinyl, yeah.
Yeah, on Discogs.
I'm going to sell it on Discogs.
Nice.
Yeah.
I picked up that Beatles Anthology 5 DVD box set for $40. I was like, shit, in perfect nick.
I've been wanting to see that 8 days a week documentary about them that came out.
Yeah. I've not seen that one yet. Ron Howard. That's what puts me off Ron Howard. I'm like, how saccharine is this going to be?
Yeah. You know, Ron Howard's not a director who stands out to me, but, you know, I still want to check it out.
If it was, I know, Scorsese, who's pretty good with music documentaries, I'd watch it, but it's not.
Yeah, Scorsese's music docs are nothing to sneeze at.
No.
He's a boomer who, you know.
He knows his shit. Yeah, he knows his shit.
Like, he listens to the stuff. He listens to the music.
Yes, absolutely.
The best Beatles documentary I've ever seen still, and I've seen this anthology, but, oh my God, many, many years ago. The best one was the one called The Complete Beatles from 82, which was narrated by Malcolm McDowell.
I've never seen that.
That's fantastic, but it's very.
I've never
seen
it either.
Oh, okay. But it's spelled Complete, Beatles, like, you know, Beatles.
The Complete Beatles.
Yeah, The Complete Beatles from 82.
I wonder if it played on cable TV or something.
Oh, I think so. It was definitely on VHS, and I think it got a Laserdisc release as well. But, hard to find, but really, really good. Really good documentary. Surprised none of you two have seen it. Must be one of those ones that's gotten.
I feel
lost.
I've heard of that. The complete, like, I've heard about that. I've heard of that documentary.
Yeah,
but I never thought much of it. I mean, but I've never seen it either.
Hmm.
So,
if I've got a burn of it in the garage, which I think I might have got it off a friend of mine. I'll it might be worth talking about. I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. What Beatles stuff have we done in the past? We did Give My Regards to Broad Street.
can we count
era.
That?
Yeah, that was way back.
That was the BJ era. That was it. Yeah. I don't think we haven't done a Rock Month for the Beatles, obviously.
No. You know what Beatles movie I liked a lot was Backbeat.
Oh, with yeah,
with Stephen Dorff as Stephen Dorff. Stu Sutcliffe.
Yeah, I did see that on tape when it came out. It was okay. It wasn't bad.
I liked that one, and I hated I Want to Hold Your Hand. Thought that movie sucked. Hated it.
I've never seen it.
That's a Zemeckis movie, right?
Yeah. I saw it
on HBO as a little kid, and I didn't understand it or like it. So
it's not good. Not good. I didn't like it.
We haven't even covered Hard Day's Night or Help or anything, have we?
No. At all. I showed Hard Day's Night in my film class.
Yeah? How'd it go?
Yeah, because the students seemed to like it, you know, because they know the Beatles, but they were like, oh, they were in a movie, you know? So
bloody earth, are in a
movie. They seemed to enjoy it, and, you know, we kind of talked about how it sort of helped define that music video style. All the stuff with them running around the field. Paul grabs the camera. It's just super cool.
So you basically boomer-cated them.
Yeah, I was trying to. I was basically. I was telling them that they should read Rolling Stone magazine.
Oh, jeez.
The Beatles are like the ultimate boomer worship band.
they really are. But you know that they were interested in it, and you know, they thought it was fun and funny.
When are you going to show them Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park?
I should have shown them that, really.
You'll never do it, so stop lying.
The other one we watched was Paul McCartney Really Is the Last Test.
Oh, yes.
Harris.
Yes, we did too.
We did
yeah.
that one.
Yeah.
That one.
But really, can you count those two? Because one's a shit movie and one's a fake documentary.
I know. yeah, we should do that. The Complete Beatles. We should do that.
We've barely done any Elvis stuff, except the episode you and I did. Hannah back in Memphis.
Way back.
Way,
yeah.
way. Way back.
Yeah.
We did the Western.
Yes.
Oh yeah, did, Flaming Star. We did too. Shit.
Yeah, we did. We did Flaming Star. Yeah.
Mm.
We should do another Elvis movie sometime. Yeah.
King Creole.
Yeah. King Creole, you know. Come on. It's the cream of the crop.
Oh,
that
Viva
and Viva
Las Vegas.
Vegas.
Yeah.
Which, Vegas. John, you covered that on a, you know,
or just about some other show that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Or we should do Stay Away Joe.
Yeah, I've covered it. I can't even get
through it.
Or we should do a change of habit with Mary Tyler Moore.
Ooh. Where that's the one where Elvis plays John Carpenter.
Yeah, and he slaps Mary Tyler Moore, I think. He slaps a nun. I think it's the one.
Right.
Yeah.
That's where he says a woman, he said that four nuns were raped, three against their will.
Jesus.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Something like that.
That's when the king was losing his shit.
For a movie of that era, that's a pretty lousy thing to say.
Yeah.
It's as lousy as your connection, John. So I think on that note, we better rate this thing and we're nearly done with our 60-minute FM radio show for this week.
All right.
Well, so, Stu, what would you give it?
I'm going to give this an 8. I thoroughly enjoyed it, I want that Blu-ray. I have to find
it somehow. It's a great Blu-ray. Arrow put out a great Blu-ray.
Yes, Mr. Arrow mouthpiece.
Did your check arrive?
Yeah.
Yeah, did your monthly crop of films turn up that you get for free?
Just cleared. Just cleared. Check just cleared.
Mm.
I said that this movie in my review, I said this movie needs Geddy Lee yelping of salesman in it. Of salesman! I gave it a 6, but I think that's a solid rating. It's a good light music movie that I think is a wonderful time capsule. The way Empire Records has become a time capsule. Like, Empire Records was one of those movies that was kind of poorly reviewed. Nobody really cared at the time, but now it's a cult classic because it reminds people of that era. You know, it's a nostalgia piece now. So, John, what about you?
I give it a 6, and it's only because I didn't think it was that funny. And the plot, the whole thing, man, we can't have army commercials on our radio. So it dates pretty badly.
And the guy smoking weed,
man, I'm just
James Keach, yeah.
James Keach is the Stacy's brother, is like this long haired army guy. It's like a lot of that. It's like only in a Hollywood movie of that time, you know.
James Keach.
We just didn't have John Nolte to get pissed about it in 1978.
We had James Keach getting stoned in this movie. We had Stacy Keach getting stoned in one of her Cheech and Chong movies, or pretty much all the Cheech and Chong movies he was in.
Yeah.
And a fun fact, James Keach was married to buddy, what's her name? That good-looking woman from
Jane Seymour.
Jane Seymour. Thank you. I lost her name for a second.
Yeah, Jane Seymour.
Yeah, wow. There's hope yet. There's hope, at least. I will say one last thing, that confirmed, whatever you want to use, that the women of the 70s were more organically beautiful then than they are these days.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Look at them.
These days they don't even try.
No, they don't.
Well, the ones in popular culture, they either don't try or you have like weird cartoon characters. It's like it's an extreme. So weird. You have Cardi.
I'm down with Vincent Gallo's description of this generation. So
yes.
What was that?
Prince Vince has been on fire lately.
Yeah. He said this, he said it'd be one thing if this ugly, stupid generation actually produced good music or movies or poetry or any type of art, and they don't. It's just, they're just ugly and stupid and dumb, and, you know, it's true.
Vincent Gallo.
It's like you're either Cardi B or Meghan Trainor, you know.
Yeah.
Or Black China, whatever the fuck that thing is.
I know what that is.
Oh, some woman named Black China. She looks, sounds like a name of a fucking YT album, but she looks awful.
Dave Manichetti created her.
From the ashes of the three other dead members of YT came Black China.
Yeah, at least you can say it had some good music you can dig into, and you can say it for Gen X. You can't say it for millennials or Zoomers, whatever the hell.
No, we haven't gotten like any there's hardly any great music or films or anything, you know.
This is the first film I've actually watched, or one of the only few films I've watched since lockdown.
I watched and you liked in the late 90s. It's awful.
Yeah, but for me, during this lockdown, this is the only film, one of the only few films I've watched since lockdown. I've just no interest at all to watch anything. The odd documentary here and there, sure, but actual film, no, nothing. I'm just like, I'm just listening to music way more these days of the vid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for sure. Which is why you like this movie so much.
Yeah, I really did. It was just a pleasant surprise. But I was able to draw parallels between this and WKRP. So,
yeah, I didn't know about that. So that's something cool to learn about. I'll have to go check that show out.
But yeah, watch that pilot and then watch a few episodes.
I think it was totally blundered. I don't care what Wikipedia
says. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't believe Wikipedia at all.
Nope. No, I think WKRP saw this FM and said, good idea for a television show.
Hugh Wilson's Tully Lang is out.
Yeah. For sure. All right.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
That happens
with
TV all the time. Every Glenn Larson produced steals from...
like Star Trek was just Forbidden Planet, you know?
Yep.
Pretty much. BJ and the Bear was Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so many shows were just like, hey, we can make a show out of that. Mm-hmm. Out of that movie, you know?
About Jake and the Fat Man? What was that ripped off of?
Clerks? I don't know.
Cheech and Chong.
You reckon? Or Eddie Trunk. That'd be Ace and the Fat. That'd be Ace and the Fat Fuck. That's what that would be.
Hey, I thought that was good. It's good stuff. Underrated. Liked it. All right.
Boy, I tell you what. Boy, I wish one last thing. Boy, I wish I had downloaded that bloody interview they had with that ex-girlfriend of Ace Frehley's, because that was a fireball of information. But it got ripped down off of YouTube after 24 hours. It was full on.
That's too bad.
Full on. Boy, I wish I had got that one. That's one that got away. It was something else. All right. Well, what's right, next guys. Week? We're going to be nice and do one Rock Month episode. Seeing as we fucked up Doc Month, we're going to do Rock Month. Just one.
Yeah.
Not a month for them, just one only. So don't get too excited.
Yeah, just one. It's going to be good.
It's going to be good. Yeah.
All right. Well, in that case, well, guys, we'll just go ahead and say adios.
See you later, Never Trunk.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com, type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.